Can you hear all right?
Yeah.
Good. So, officially, Soto Zen, which is our school of Zen, celebrates Buddha's birthday on April 8. Who knows? There's another way of celebrating it called Vesak, mostly, I think, in Nikaya Buddhism. And I think it's in May sometime, and it's a celebration of Buddha's enlightenment and Buddha's birth at the same time. And you know, scholars debate whether the Buddha even existed and where the teaching originated. Somebody taught these things. Somebody shared this teaching with us 2,500 plus years ago. Maybe it was in Afghanistan. Maybe it was in northern India. Maybe it was in southern Nepal. I don't care. For me, it's the teachings that matter. My teacher, Sojin Mel Weitzman Roshi, he says it more bluntly than that. He kind of says, who cares? I do care, but I don't care. I don't think it's the most important thing. And celebrating Buddha's birthday at this time feels to me like a celebration. It's just one of our version of many celebrations at this time of year of the spring of rebirth, of renewal. Right? Easter, which I'm sure grew out of pagan ceremonies, you know, is a celebration of rebirth and of spiritual, like it was liberation. And some people celebrate the spring equinox, March. Nowadays, this year it was the 20th. Nowadays they fix it exactly. For people my age, spring starts on March 21st. Damn it. But at any rate, this time of year is a time of regeneration, certain kind of freedom. You know, Passover is also about this time of year, and it's a different kind of thing, but again, it's still about freedom. It's about liberation from Egypt. So I think that we fit right into that, and that this notion of Buddha's birth is about the rebirth of something. And I say rebirth in the sense that in the Lotus Sutra, we're taught that he never died and he never went away. It's just kind of available. And the founder of our school in Japan, Dogen, said, it doesn't matter how long ago it was, when you sit down and get quiet and pay attention, Buddha's right there. So you don't have an excuse that we're in the time of the decadent Dharma and you couldn't possibly practice. No. Sit down, get quiet, pay attention, that's it. He said it differently from that, but I think he would probably agree. So there are mythopoetic stories of the birth of the Buddha, and it's also a classic hero's tale. You know what I'm talking in folklore, I guess there's analysis, and there's a book about it, and I'm forgetting the name, but at any rate, you know, it involves a miraculous birth and certain special powers and things like that. And Buddha, the story is that a very auspicious white elephant appeared to his mother and entered her in a dream, and lo and behold, she was pregnant, and she was completely pure throughout her pregnancy, and she didn't eat meat, and she was just glowing the whole time. And then it was time for her to actually give birth, and the tradition was that the woman would go to her mother's house, which made a lot of sense, I think. Anyway, so she was on her way to her parents' house, and she stopped to rest, and she put her hand up on the branch of a salt tree, I think, and she gave birth out of her side to the baby Buddha. And there are wonderful poems about how celestial blossoms, Udumbara blossoms fell, and celestial music, and these two streams of one hot and one cold that met, of course, and bathed the mother and the child in warm water. It's wonderful, wonderful images. And then the Buddha is born, and there are lots of stories about how he took seven steps, and he may have roared like a lion. He may have said that this statue that we're going to shower with flower petals, if you brought flower petals, please put them in those baskets, at any rate, that we're going to, that statue, he has one hand up and one hand down, pointing to the sky and the earth. And that story says that he said, "I alone am the world honored one." And the standard Zen lecture about that says, is a riff on the alone. Is it one alone, or is it all one? I don't know that he said any of those things. Assuming that he existed, I kind of think he wouldn't have been so aggressive. But the point of the story, I think, is that to help us understand that it was a big deal. I mean, whoever wrote this is us talking to ourselves, you understand, all of it. And so it's a big deal. We need to pay attention to this. We care about this. And it isn't him saying, I'm wonderful. Though there's lots of times in the stories where we're in this old sutras and so on, where he does speak of himself as, I'm the one who's enlightened, I'm the one who knows. I figure he did. He was and he did. That, you know, he wasn't boasting, he was simply stating a fact. At any rate, it was a big deal. For me anyway, it's a big deal, and I'm very grateful for these teachings. The sutras from his time, the really basic ones, the wheel turning sutra about the four noble truths and mindfulness of body and mind and mindfulness of breathing, those ancient sutras. And I think also equally growing out of his teachings are the ones that our traditions, our Mahayana Buddhist traditions honor, that have to do with emptiness and have to do with the notion of a bodhisattva. I'm very grateful for them. And if you read the old sutras, you can see these things. You can see talk about emptiness or whatever in those sutras. It's not as explicit as some of the later teachings, but it's there. So I think when we honor the baby Buddha, what we will do, when lecture's over, we'll gather in a semicircle around that altar over there, and we'll chant the Sutra of Loving Kindness, which is actually from his time, which is his words of loving kindness. And we will take turns showering the baby Buddha with flower petals. So that's an enactment, a ritual way of saying, thank you. We appreciate you. I appreciate you. And I'm grateful. And it occurred to me, I usually kind of rest before I give a lecture, and I let it sort of sink in another level, maybe. And what occurred to me this morning was, it's also an enacting of saying, welcome. Welcome, baby Buddha. We're glad you came. And it is, along with gratitude, they're not separate really, but it is a way of saying with your body, I open my heart to you. I open my heart to you, that's what we're doing. We're opening our hearts to the teaching. We're saying, I want to let this in. I want to be available to your teaching. What's coming to me, I hadn't thought about particularly before, so I'm going to say it and then maybe I'll take it back, I'm not sure. But it's like, I want to make it my own. The trouble with that, it just feels kind of selfish or individual or owning or grasping or something, but there is a way, I think, that I want to make it my own. I want to integrate it. I want to make these teachings part of my marrow. You know, I don't want the teachings to just be in my head. I want them in my heart. I want them in my gut. I want to embody it. So I like that. I want to make it my own. It's okay. And I do. So I want to say welcome. And one of the things I want to share with you is this wonderful part of the Lotus Sutra, which has the feeling that I get in the spring. Probably for us Californians, it's when it starts to really rain. And now I feel like I've been saying this recently. We've had enough rain that we could actually start complaining about it. Enough already. You know, for at the beginning, I just kept saying, oh, I'm so glad we really need this. And I had more of the feeling that I'm about to describe probably in the fall. You know, that for me, I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and I was raised with concern about water and rain. So for me, at any rate, it really is, that's in my bones too. And so when there's been drought, when it starts raining again, it feels as if it's just washing my body and soothing my heart that's been worried about lack of water. So I don't know how it is for you guys, but for me, that's the way. And this parable, it's from the parable of the herbs, and it's about the rain reaching everywhere. And it's about, just in case, it's about the teacher teaching reaching everywhere. And that we each hear it as we need it, as we can use it. You know, they use one of the marks of the Buddha is he would lecture and then everybody in his audience could understand him, even though they all spoke different languages. And then they could each use it. And I've always thought one way of understanding that is that when somebody is really speaking deeply from their heart and their experience, it reaches people. You know, so often somebody will say, more than one person, you know, will say after lecture, I felt like you were speaking to me. I felt like you were speaking to me. And I'll hear that maybe from six different people. And then they'll tell me what struck them, and it was totally different from other people. And I've had that experience on the receiving end. And I think it's because the speaker is really speaking from the heart and their experience. And then we resonate with that. So this point of this is about the rain refreshing as the plants need it. I may be explaining too much. So this is an excerpt from it. It is like a great cloud rising above the world, covering all things everywhere, a beneficent cloud full of moisture. Flashes of lightning shine and glint. The voice of thunder vibrates afar, bringing gladness and ease to all. The sun's rays are veiled and the earth is cooled. The cloud lowers and spreads, as if it might be caught and gathered. Its rain everywhere equally descends on all sides, streaming and pouring without stint, enriching all the land, on mountains, by rivers, in steep valleys, in hidden recesses. There grow the plants, trees, and herbs. Trees, big or small, the shoots of all the ripening grain, sugar cane, and grapevine. All these, by the rain, are fertilized and abundantly enriched. The dry ground is all soaked, and herbs and trees flourish together. From the one water which issued from that cloud, plants, trees, thickets, forests, according to their need, receive moisture. All the trees, superior, middle, inferior, all, each according to its size, grow and develop. Roots, stalks, branches, and leaves, blossoms and fruits in their brilliant colors. By the pouring of the one rain, all become fresh and glossy. Just as their bodies, forms, and natures are divided into great and small, so the enriching rain, though one and the same, yet makes each thing flourish. Yet makes each thing flourish. And the Buddha's teaching comes to us that way, I think, and I'm grateful for that, that he taught in a way that I could hear it and you could hear it. It's available equally to all of us, but we all take it in differently. And I'm particularly grateful that he said, don't place anyone's head on top of your own. And he said, listen to the teaching, examine it for yourself, and see, he didn't use the word resonate, but I'll use it. See if it resonates with you. Does this make sense based on your experience? So yes, listen to the teaching, but don't give up your own common sense. He didn't use that phrase either. But that's one of that approach is something I'm particularly grateful for. And in our way of practice, I'm particularly grateful for the quiet. I feel like I was given basic instruction, but then I was kind of left to figure it out for myself. And it works for me. It doesn't work for everybody, and other people take their rain in different ways. But I probably, because I'm pig-headed, I just needed to figure it out for myself. You know, I'm not a big fan of somebody telling me what my experience of a particular meditation period is going to be. I've experienced that. And what the interesting thing was, I had that experience. But I did not integrate it. It wasn't mine. It didn't become mine. And I don't know that it stuck particularly. I wasn't that new to Buddhist practice or anything at that point, so I don't really know what it would have been like if I'd been in my first couple of years of practice. But at any rate, I love our silence. I'm quite attached to it, actually, probably. But that is one of the things that I am particularly grateful for. And I I feel the silence in his teachings. But I don't know, but this is how the rain has come to me. And I think it's useful. I keep forgetting when we're in. Okay. Yeah. I want to leave room for you folks. I'm really grateful for Dogen. And I'm grateful for the Sutra on the Mindfulness of Breath, the Anapanasati Sutta. It's partly just because it's fun to say. But it's a wonderful teaching. And that's one of the early suttas of Buddhist time. He probably said that or something like that. As you know, it wasn't written down for hundreds of years, so somebody wrote it down, and not that long after he was there. So I'll at least, you know, we can put it on him. It's a focus. Right? We don't have to worry so much about whether he actually said it or when it happened. It was very early Buddhist teaching, at any rate, and I'm grateful for it. So I said to you before we started recording, I said that I was going to open it up. I'd just like you to take a moment and reflect, you know, what is it for you? What's the point? For you, what are you struck by in the teaching that you've received? And what are you particularly grateful for? Okay, so just close your eyes for a moment and just reflect. So I would like to just go around. I personally have trouble, you know, when people raise their hands, some people never speak, and I never know when somebody's done, and I never know when to jump in. So please, let's go around. If it's a gift for everybody, if you will say something. It's not required, however, but it is a gift. And I think you can be brave like the Buddha. You alone are the world honored one. You can roar like a lion or just speak. Anyway, when you're done speaking, please give a little bow so the next person knows that you're done rather than just pausing to think or something like that. Okay. So let's start with Clem and just go up and back. And then this way and back around here.
I always love being first. I'm grateful for the teaching because it sounds like the truth. When I first heard it, I was rather struck by how it resonated with me, and I'm very grateful for the equanimity that it provides. Believe it or not, I used to be a very angry person, and I don't experience that often anymore.
Well, I started worrying about the universe when I was about 9 years old, and kind of developed my own philosophy of what it was all about. And then when I found Alan Watts and pursued a little bit about Zen, it was like, oh, there is a way to be in, there's a definition for for what I feel is true. And it was You know, kind of like coming home, I guess. Mm. I'm grateful.
At the moment, I'm just grateful for surrender.
When I think about this practice in the Buddha, I'm the most grateful for the invitation.
You were speaking earlier about sit down, shut up, pay attention. Well, you didn't say shut up. You said,
sometimes
quiet.
I do. Okay. I didn't know.
So as I came in this morning, I sat down and I did just that. And I said, I'm grateful for the collective silence. And I guess that's saying I'm grateful for the Sangha.
I'm grateful for the emphasis on just entering your life where you're at. I have young children, and I've been practicing for 3 years, and I feel like it's helped me to just have a richer experience. And I know the time is going to go so fast. They'll be grown. So to have found this now while they're young is just, I'm so grateful for that.
I'm grateful for the teaching of silent meditation. I'm very grateful for that.
I'm grateful for a lot of things in the very limited time that I've been practicing. Among them is generosity, the ability to do something for somebody else instead of for myself. I'm grateful for the ability to shut my radio and TV off and appreciate the silence, Mary. And like Clem, I want to be, truth, authentic, and this is a good way to learn how to be an authentic person. Thank you.
I like the being able to figure it out myself, like you were saying, that probably there's no other way I can do it. I like the Soto Zen, how there's a lot of space and to figure things out. Thanks.
Currently, I'm grateful for the teaching that opens me to a greater reality than one that's delimited by temporary events, like my own existence. I think I'll be grateful for that one for some time.
Right now, that question for me, I'm grateful for the indestructible quality of it, that it's still here after 2,500 years, and there've been, and also that I can't really say what the teachings are. Like anytime I think I have, oh well, it's that. It's not. It's something else. So, or it's. Yeah, I'm grateful for that aspect of it, but I can't say what it is. That's fine. This way or this
way? Well, I agree with everything you said during your lecture. For me, I kind of see the Dharma like evolution, you know. Even if Buddha never existed, the Dharma is still there, and it's always been there, just like evolution was there before Darwin and the others came along. But where I'm so grateful for Buddha, who we're here to celebrate his birthday today, and I don't know about the fabulous stories of his birth or anything like that. I probably tend to disbelieve that stuff. But what I strongly believe in is that there was this guy who came along and he had such passion, effort, patience, and courage to sit with this and to be able to articulate and expound the Dharma for us. And it is everlasting. And in my own experience, you know, I've been going down spiritual roads for almost my entire life, and I've read the Bible, Old and New Testament, several times, and sometimes I'm like, what does this parable mean? You know, why don't you just say it? And when I first came across, and I came into Buddhism before Zen, but and that was through Bhikkhu Bodhi's In the Buddha's Own Words. And I remember opening up that first sutra on the Four Noble Truths and all of that, and it just struck me right between the eyes and was complete resonance. And, you know, I continuously turn to these old sutras, and I'm just stricken by how, even though they were articulated 2,500 plus years ago, wow, how they have direct application to this modern world and me here and today. And I'm so grateful for that and everything that it's shown me so far. And like you said, that the Buddha said, figure it out for yourself.
I guess I'm mostly grateful just that he had the charisma that he had and able to kickstart the Sangha, because, you know, I think that the truths of Buddhism are self-evident enough that I think humanity picks it up in different ways and different traditions, but you really can't do this stuff by yourself. And so the fact that he was able to kickstart the Sangha is what really is most meaningful to me.
I'm grateful for the same thing, that check in with yourself, because I've always been one of those people. Don't follow the boss, don't follow a religion out here. Check in and see what it means to me. And that makes it big and life expanding, and it validates. So that's what I'm grateful for.
I'm grateful for that the teachings continue to feel like an invitation to apply these teachings to my everyday life, mm-hmm. big and small, and particularly on the small, the ordinary, the not so special.
I'm grateful for the inner wisdom that comes through my practice of silent meditation.
Thank you. I really resonate. I don't know what you mean by surrender, but myself being a grateful member of Al-Anon, that's the kind of thing I hear in it. But also, not separately, that is something that really, you know, it's when you said it, I thought, right, me too. When I bow, for me, it's a surrender, and it's not a surrender to anything or anybody. It's a surrender of my weapons. It's like a giving up of the ego battle, the self-clinging battle that I engage in much too much of the time. So it's an enacting of my intention to just set it down. Set down that burden. Surrender that burden to Buddha, to the universe, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Just set it down. So that's what came up for me. So forgive me for sort of piggybacking on your word. And I don't want to put you on the spot. So anyway, I've been really touched by what everybody has said, and it feels like we're in the process. We all validate the teachings for one another, and that's Sangha. That's Buddha Dharma Sangha all wished in together.